Hello and welcome to this week's podcast from journalism.co.uk, where we'll be looking at what mobile audiences want from news and how news organisations are adapting their content and strategies to engage readers on these devices. There's a growing percentage of readers who only access stories from mobile devices, but how can media outlets captivate these audiences and what are the challenges involved? Speaking at our last News Rewired event in London last week, Subhajit Banerjee, the mobile editor at The Guardian, explained how the news organisation has been experimenting with WhatsApp as a content curator rather than a broadcast platform, aiming to gather material from hard-to-reach places.
One of the things we've been doing of late is using WhatsApp, the chat app, as a UGC gathering tool rather than a broadcast platform. And we've done that a number of times now, particularly to reach audiences in locations we otherwise would find difficult to. We've done it for things like A-level results, for Bangkok bombing that happened last year, and the latest one, this one, during the Afghanistan earthquake. So what we did was we put out a call out in our live blog as well as on Twitter to say if you're in that area and you want to get in touch, that's the number. And we got a number of responses, but the most interesting one was the video that you can see on the right, and I'll try and play it a bit, where this was an eyewitness account. It happened, I think, moments after the event itself, and this was such a big hit on the site. It accounted for, I think, around 40% of the total video views that day. It was very powerful, as you can see, eyewitness, someone right there. So if anyone has used WhatsApp as a publisher, you'll know it's quite painful. It's not quite set up to do things like these. So we're experimenting, and once these chat apps open up for use properly by publishers, I think we'll be in a good position to make the best use of them. What really helps is to have a very clear signal and a very clear message from the top. So when our new editor-in-chief took over, she sent out a memo stating very clearly that everything we build not only has to be mobile optimized, but has to be almost mobile first. And they have to work across our mobile web offerings, our apps, where a majority of our audience is at the moment. So that really helps. That sends out a strong signal to the company, gets everyone on board, etc.
Brian O'Brien, the mobile editor at BuzzFeed News, explains how her company's news app aims to provide interesting yet digestible news to mobile audiences.
Our mobile team currently covers three different time zones. We're here in London, we're in New York, and we're also in LA. And we often use the hashtag TeamNewsApp, so that's where you can find the latest happenings from our end on Twitter. So BuzzFeed is inherently social, and we have various social platforms that many of you may have come to us through, whether it's Facebook, our website, or our Twitter pages. But what most people don't know is that more than 70% of BuzzFeed's audience is actually mobile. Now I'm here to talk to you this morning about our storytelling techniques and more about the BuzzFeed News app, which we launched in June for iOS, and this past September is when we launched for Android. Now, when it comes to storytelling, we and Team News App are committed to delivering a delightful news experience, just as everyone at BuzzFeed News is committed to being a reliable news source for our international audience. Now, what we're trying to deliver is interestingness, context, background, and that feeling of being informed. And the way we think about this on our team is that everybody has a friend who's really interesting, really witty, and is kind of like the sparkling guest at the dinner party. And they always have that one anecdote that nobody else at the dinner party has. And we want to be that friend. We want you to stumble upon something through us that you wouldn't have otherwise seen elsewhere. And it's important to note that this isn't always going to be something that we write at BuzzFeed. You know, on any given day, 50% of our content could be BuzzFeed, and 50% could be from other various outlets. You know, we pull from New York Times, BBC, Washington Post, Guardian, Mashable, NPR, the list goes on. And we do this because there's a crazy amount of good work on the internet, and BuzzFeed isn't afraid to highlight it. But providing a well-rounded app, obviously, is one thing. Making it interesting and digestible is another. So, for example, looking at breaking news here. When it comes to breaking news, we ask ourselves as editors, what are the confirmed need-to-know bits that we can provide to our audience? Now, it's not possible for us to mimic our breaking news posts that live on the web. Those are stacked with live updates. It's a constant stream of information that's given live updates minute by minute, more or less, which are extremely important, but not necessarily for a mobile audience. We keep in mind that our users might only have 30 seconds to look at the app, So our goal is to provide an app stream that's digestible on the go. And so looking here at how we covered the Paris attacks, this is typically our, this is a breaking splash here in the middle, and that's normally a quickly catch up with three bullets, which mimic, you know, the top stories of the day. So what we converted that to was a breaking splash that gave the rundown of what's happened. We also have a timeline breaking down the when. We have a witness describing the scene. We have a photo gallery of people reacting to the acts, and of course, the attacks, and of course, the site of the attacks. And all of these are shareable. Now, and as editors, we know that when something happens, the who, the when, the why, and how matter just as much as the what. So we make sure you've got context and background to major news events as they happen. And we also love making it known that we have reporters on the ground who are giving live updates via Twitter and our BuzzFeed news posts. And by doing this, by showcasing reporters' work, what we're doing, and this is across the BuzzFeed family, so it goes for news, life, and buzz, we're just giving our users a more comprehensive and native experience, which they can easily connect with our reporters, and it kind of continually gives them that feeling of being engaged with an ongoing story. And another example here. So on the left, this was a module that had five or six bullets, and it's called Weekend Sounds. And so what we did is that we asked one of our BuzzFeed audio editors to just give us her podcast recommendations, and she did so with this list, which gave kind of a brief teaser, and if you tap on that, that led you to the episode itself. And this just kind of had fresh content, and it made for a different type of user product engagement. So users could read the summary, they could tap, they could listen to the episode, and they could share it with their friends. And on the right here is a recent series on homegrown terrorism and how it affects our daily lives. Now, for about a week, we provided this in the app, giving fresh content on a daily basis. And we also linked out to the series landing page. So you could tap that, and it brought them to give them all of our users all the stories. And kind of this left our readers with that feeling of being informed on a variety of related stories throughout the week. And in terms of how we tell stories, so what you've seen from the examples so far, we use a variety of different formats. We love URLs, timelines, numbered lists, native text modules, tweet embeds, Vine embeds, photo galleries. And our app is, you know, curated with the assumption that not every user is going to click on an individual story. So what you see here, like, how can we give plenty of information by just a glance at the app? And this is how we do it. We often consider those who might only be reading or quickly catch up with the top three bullets, which depict the stories of the day. For those who are commuting to and from work, or who are just simply at the line in the line at the grocery store. So it's like, how can we make the news digestible on the go? And furthermore, how can we grab their attention? And that often could be a shareable quote. It could be a fact. It could be a piece of data. Could be an emoji-driven list, which often gets the attention of a lot of people. And all of this helps diversify our app stream. And on that, we also, like majority of news apps out there, send push notifications, in which we provide context, clarity, humor, and emoji. And before crafting pushes, we always ask ourselves as editor, is it confirmed? Is the information I have confirmed? Is it factual? And is it well-sourced? Also, is it self-standing? You know, is the average reader going to look at this push and go, what? I mean, obviously, that's not good. And is it contextual? Do I have room to add context to kind of give this push a little extra oomph? And we send push notifications because we want to inform people of breaking news. We want to bring clarity during fast-moving situations. And we like to delight and surprise our audience, hence the Missy Elliott push that you see there, with news they might find useful or even entertaining. And overall, our goals for Team News App, we want users to feel like they can get caught up on the news and not have to click through each individual story. So you kind of have seen that through the formats that we've used. We're also looking to experiment with audio soon. So for those who are driving to work can listen to the news versus reading it. And also working on more video embeds aside from what we can currently do with Vine.
News organization CNN are also experimenting with video on mobile and have had success with long-form video, believing that audiences are often attracted to more in-depth forms of storytelling when viewing on mobile devices. Inga Thorda is the editorial and programming director at CNN Digital International.
Obviously, we are mainly known for our TV, and so we've been moving into digital quite heavily in the last sort of 10, 15 years. The mobile market is growing, and we have on CNN International digitally at least 50% of our audience is now coming to us via mobiles. And by mobiles, I'm now talking about the web as well as the app. Videos are increasingly important for mobiles as well. This isn't just about written stories, and we're finding that the growth that we're seeing on desktops and everywhere else on mobiles is huge on mobiles as well. And I am going to attempt to play this for you.
Despite its medieval sense of justice, in many ways, ISIS runs a surprisingly modern bureaucracy.
So I'm going to deliberately stop the sound there, because obviously on mobiles it's important for us that people can watch it without the sound. So we use the narrative as an aid if you can listen to it, but you can also watch it and still get a sense of what we're talking about without it. Now, I recognize that this is a heavily produced video. I know that CNN is privileged to be in a position where we can allow ourselves to experiment a lot with video and how we can, you know, produce them. And we use the sort of a mixture of animations and real footage. But we're finding that this kind of content works on mobiles, and we're getting a very large uptake on it. And that's a very big departure from where we were before, which is putting television on mobiles, basically. And that's a content that hasn't done very well traditionally for us. We don't do autoplay on mobiles at the moment. We're still experimenting with how people want to do mobiles, but we're seeing a very big engagement with it nevertheless. I think the other interesting thing is that I was at a television conference the other day, and people said to me, oh, well, you're all about short form, that's what digital is about. And I questioned that, and I said, actually, people are about very specific video content on mobiles. It needs to be quality, and people need to feel that there's been put a lot of effort into it. And we've been experimenting with longer form things. So you started, if you went to the CNN website yesterday, you would have seen a piece called Blackface, which was actually a film that we did about racism in the Netherlands, which was about 7 minutes long. We're about to release another one that is a mobile digital product, which is about 17 minutes long. So we believe that people will consume those things on mobiles as well, and you shouldn't limit yourself completely to short form. The only kind of real mobile-only product we've done has been around social. So we've done, we were one of the first people on Snapchat Discover. And obviously these videos are different because they are verticals. They are portrait rather than landscape, which the other ones mostly are. We publish on Snapchat Discover 5 stories every day at 5 p.m. Eastern time. So far we have about 700,000 users for that, and it's been quite successful. Mostly it's also been successful for us in experimenting with portrait video and how that works and how we can bring it forward. Obviously, again, talking about my business, where we also are in the television industry in terms of how we can't be doing bespoke material for everything without thinking about other platforms. Portrait are still a bit of an issue for us in terms of how we migrate it onto the bigger screen. But so far, the Snapchat has been an interesting experiment for us in how we can move that forward. And we're hoping that we can take that lessons we've learned there and move them on to more news, where we produce mobile-first content for news stories.
But even though news organisations are becoming more and more creative with their content and the way they produce it, what are the challenges with producing the material from a publishing point of view, and what works best on mobile when focusing on navigation and ease of use? Michael Kowalski is the founder of tech startup company Contentment.
You know, we've all seen infinite numbers of graphs and so on about mobile. Just one slightly at random that I thought was kind of interesting about some research Ofcom did about, you know, asking people in the UK what's the most important device for them for internet access. And, you know, desktop is coming in at 14%, smartphone and tablet between them more than half. I mean, it shows, though, that, you know, desktop and laptop is still significant, obviously, but that is also shifting quite quickly, too. There's the growth on that is quite sort of fast. So mobile really is extremely interesting space. You know, sort of everything is going to mobile. And this isn't just from a news point of view, but also actually from a software point of view. That includes, I think, the means of production. That all goes to mobile as well, everything. There's a lot of challenges around that because, frankly, the whole mobile web is a kind of hack. It's a kind of bolt-on. The web was never meant for mobile. Mobile came along, you know, more than 10 years after the web, and everything we've done to support mobile on the web has just been bolted on top of something else. So there are just a lot of problems. You know, you've got, from a user experience point of view, this tiny, tiny little screen and then big fat fingers. Very poor kind of affordances, you know, UX terms for thing that you know that you can interact with. And almost no discovery. I mean, the only way to, you know, you don't want to litter your screen with buttons, so you've got to, how does a user find out what they can do? You know, there's the dreaded how to use screen. Device memory and so on, still quite limited on most, especially given the wide number of Android devices in the market. There are a lot of kind of performance constraints and so on you have to worry about that you don't think about in terms of desktop. And this kind of interruptibility is thing as well, the kind of 30 seconds that somebody might pick it up. It's not just about going on and offline, but also that a mobile something you pick up and you put down and you get a phone call in the middle of it. So technically, a lot of kind of really difficult things, both technically and in design terms. Random little selection of things that we've found with working with customer content and so on. One thing about animation, so a genuine use of animation is delight, that a lot of animation is just nice to see, you know, and that's great. But animation does have other kind of quite strong uses. One thing is that is about illustrating that user journey. It's showing you where you've been, because with your fat finger, you quite often go the wrong place. Showing the journey, the direction of travel, shows the way back as well, that you can expect that if something expands out, maybe you can, you know, pinch to close it. If something slides from one side, maybe you can swipe it back the other way to kind of get rid of it. In a way, you can use animation too to sort of as a replacement for hover states. You know, you can jiggle something to show that it is something that you can interact with. Where on a desktop, you might have moved your mouse over and it changed colour or something. Photo galleries. Now, the whole kind of the dot navigation type photo gallery, I'm sure we've seen a lot of, are actually kind of pretty bad from a discovery point of view, you know, that you don't know what's there until you look through it all. So it's quite widely used. Hey, we use it, but it's actually pretty, I think, a pretty bad model. There's lots of other ways of approaching these things. I think even just simple, you know, picture grids, tiled grids can be very effective for showing what's there, so you can more effectively make a choice about what it is you want to look at as a user. For larger numbers of images, there's all kinds of ways you can kind of slice these up and do little grids and so on, so that you can, you know, do the exploration before you do the engagement on individual pictures within a gallery. And I just quite like this one because I like circles. But there's you know, I think there's a lot of kind of ways to play with doing galleries that are actually more discoverable than what we're kind of mostly doing. And ditto with captions. Actually, I haven't got a lot to show here, really, but, you know, it's one of the nice things about mobile is you don't have to see the caption if you don't want to, or at least on this small space, you know, you've got this picture, captions over top of it can really take a lot away from it. And there's lots of different ways of revealing and disclosing captions and credits, you know, whether it's kind of flipping or sliding in or out or whatever. Again, here, it might be quite nice to use a bit of animation to show that there's something tappable there. Because we do deal with a lot of business data, we've been struggling with tables a lot. So, like, a lot of business news will have masses of tabular data in it. And that can be really hard to read and navigate on a mobile device. So, you know, we can look at doing things like when we swap, if we're on a small screen, we only show a few maybe curated data points. We pick out, in the editorial process, we pick out the important points and we only show those. And if the user wants to engage more, then they can dig in and look further. Obviously, techniques like filtering and sorting are useful here as well. And we're doing a little bit of work at the moment about favoriting and sharing individual data points within tables and charts, which with this kind of data can actually be kind of useful. Yeah, maybe I'm only interested in, I don't know, BAE systems, and I want to look at that data point every month or every week as new information comes to light. So I think we can go much more granular on this data. What looks sort of like a weakness to start with actually is kind of a strength on digital that we can go dig into in a much more kind of granular way. And ditto charts. I think the principle of navigating a data point at a time can work quite well. This chart, like the donut one I showed earlier, is you know SVG based, so it can be we can pick up interactions on it, and we can animate bits of it and so forth if you want to. So we can create a kind of user journey through graph data or charts that's going one point at a time. Okay, authoring. So one thing that we've found super useful is using a kind of cardified approach that we provide, you know, build libraries of cards so that when we're telling a story, the story gets chunked up into cards and you can mix and match different cards depending on the content of the story. That means we can build responsiveness and workflow into a card at the card level, and they're much more reusable and so on. You're not having to kind of commission new work every time you do it. That's kind of worked quite well. Finally, just very briefly on some of the horrible technical stuff again. Performance, I think, we can't overrate how important it is on this. It's really hard to get it right. I think what we've seen with ad blocking is that the ad tech industry didn't take performance seriously enough, and you know, being hoist by it really. That there are a lot of techniques, some of which I've outlined here, that we can use to try and improve performance. When I say can use, I think we must use actually, because you know, on mobile, a user is not going to wait more than 3 seconds at most. I think is the stat that gets bandied around before they abandon a page. You know, if we take this kind of stacked card approach, we can progressively load cards as they kind of come into view, apply interactions, stop and start videos, all this kind of thing, and do something that is still kind of a fluid experience as the user goes through. It's still tough, though. Oh, aspect ratio. Aspect ratio is so important in all this stuff. It's the absolute... I don't have any developers in the room. It's totally the missing bit of CSS. I need to sort out aspect ratio. Because if you're hiding stuff, you know, and revealing it later, you need to know how tall it is. You see this a lot, actually, with things like live stories where tweets kind of resize as they're loading in, and you're scrolling down, and the story's jumping around underneath you. It's a very, very poor user experience. So I wish they'd sort that. I think, really, the key thing about this, and again, where the ad tech failed was assuming that what worked on the web would work on mobile. It's a much more resource-constrained space, and a lot of stuff just won't work. I like the Guardian's kind of testing lab, because you really got to test the hell out of this stuff.
So when reorganising news production for mobile audiences, what comes first, the journalism or the production techniques? Christopher Megan is the Director for Digital News Design and Presentation, Emerging News Products at The Washington Post. Over the past year, the Post has made an effort to expand its reach for mobile audiences with its tablet and smartphone apps, a presence on the Apple Watch, and a new desktop and mobile website.
Our goal is to elevate the journalism at any level, so that's the first priority. I think what's interesting about these products is that a lot of the seasoned journalists may not have ever thought that their story could be presented in a different format or a different manner. And I think that's where we sort of come into play, that showing them, hey, you can do this now. You can do, get them to do some video, get a very different presentation than they've ever seen with their product, either in print or web. And I think once you get that process going, then they start coming to you with ideas like, hey, I'm going to go report from wherever, Syria. I have an idea for something. Can we execute this? And so I think, I don't know that they're very separate. I mean, the journalism always comes first, obviously, but just how, I think people get inspired, the journalists get inspired by the new ways of the storytelling.
For more from this panel discussion and to catch up on workshops you may have missed from this year's News Rewired, please visit www.newsrewired.com.